You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Carolyn Phillips, appearing on behalf of the petitioner, Clarence Ramirez, Jr. If it please the Court, this Court had requested briefing on the issue of whether the lineup, the pretrial lineup, was a violation of due process. The facts are fairly simple. The state case from which the petition has arisen was a case involving identity issue, pure and simple. We have three witnesses. The question here is whether or not a pretrial lineup that occurred prior to trial and involved a police officer telling a witness who identified someone other than the petitioner violated due process. What we have is an affidavit that was submitted by the witness following conviction of the petitioner of three counts, one involving an assault with a deadly weapon against the witness who recanted, and also petty theft with a prior and burglary.
Counsel, the thing that bothers me about the recantation is it came after so many statements by the witness that he was sure about the identity. He had several opportunities to reveal any untoward conduct.
I think part of those questions could have been answered if we'd had an evidentiary hearing at the level of district court when they were reviewing this petition. I agree with you. I think there are some questions that need to be answered. However, I think the validity of the recantation and the method that it was provided, it was in writing, and there doesn't seem to be any connection between the individual, the witness, and Clarence Ramirez, Jr. There doesn't seem to be any intent on the part of this witness to better himself in any way or gain any benefit from recanting his testimony. Frankly, what he has done is set himself up for a perjury charge if, in fact, what he stated in his affidavit was true, that he had, in fact, identified someone other than the petitioner, and then when he was advised that the person who had committed the offense was in a different position in the lineup, he agreed to change his testimony, pretty much, and at the time of trial, identified the petitioner as the person who had participated in the crime.
If we accept the premise that the lineup was tainted, how do you get past the harmless error analysis?
Well, I think the Chapman actually applies here. We don't have a situation where the state court has made a ruling on the merits of the petition. We have a situation where actually the district court itself, in reviewing the petition, applied the Chapman harmless error beyond a reasonable doubt. Obviously, we disagree with the result of that. But what we have is such a situation where there's been no findings by the state court whether or not the merits of the claim that the live lineup was a violation of due process, if they're valid or not. We don't have any discussion about that. What we do have is the state court making a decision that the claim should be denied purely, and I should say mostly, on a procedural ground. The petitioner, Clarence Ramirez, filed the petition improper and did not attach the trial transcripts. And on that basis, the court denied the petition. It went up to the California Supreme Court, who denied without any comment. So I think we're left in a situation where the Chapman harmless error rule actually does apply. I think the significance, and I want to...
Are you saying that the rule does apply, but the error was not harmless? Is that what you're arguing?
What I'm arguing is that the state has a burden of showing that this error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, and I think for a lot of reasons that the state can't show that.
What about the other witnesses who were able to identify?
Well, I was going to come to that. What we have is a situation of two shopliftings, basically. There was the shoplifting in November 25th for which Mr. Ramirez was charged and convicted. 11 days prior to that, there was a similar shoplifting. The trial court allowed testimony regarding that first shoplifting 11 days earlier under Evidence Code 1101, for the purposes of identity and intent. However, on a direct appeal, the Fifth District Court of Appeals said that was error, that it should not have been allowed in for purposes of identity. It could have been allowed in for intent, but the problem with that is that now you have a jury hearing testimony from a witness for purposes of identity when they should not have been hearing that. Secondly, we have a witness coming in testifying falsely about the identity of the person who came in on November 25th. And then we have a third witness who did identify Mr. Ramirez, but the jury does not have the opportunity of balancing the identification by this third witness, Adriana Arevalo, against a contradictory testimony of Rene Torres, who would have, if he had testified truthfully, if he had not been coerced or under duress, told who to identify as the perpetrator. The jury doesn't have all the facts before it. And I think, as I've cited in Nickerson, which is a case out of the Northern District, when we have the state directing or manipulating witness identification, it's the same thing as asking witness to testify falsely.
Counsel, could we go back to the evidence separate and apart from the tainted evidence in your view? We have a store clerk who was familiar with Mr. Ramirez. She knew him. He had been a regular customer there, and she identified him. Why isn't that sufficient proof of harmless error?
Because the jury wasn't allowed an opportunity to hear the testimony of the only other witness, and not only the only other witness to that shoplifting, but to the earlier shoplifting, and couldn't connect the two. He could not identify Mr. Ramirez as the perpetrator. So the jury doesn't have an opportunity to hear the testimony of Rene Torres versus Adriana Alvaro. The jury should have had that opportunity to weigh the credibility of those witnesses to make a determination. They weren't given that opportunity. As a defense, obviously, the defense was that this person, Clarence Ramirez, was not the perpetrator of the crime. So identity was very critical. If the defense had known, and if, in fact, the police officer at the time of the lineup had not directed Rene Torres who to choose, then the defense could have presented Rene Torres at the time of trial to come in and say, I don't know. I can't identify this person. I was standing 6 feet away from him. I can't identify the petitioner, Mr. Ramirez, as the perpetrator of the crime.
Wasn't there another witness, Veronica Torres?
She was not a witness to the 1125.
That was the earlier incident?
Yes, that was the earlier one where the trial court erred in allowing that testimony, her testimony, and as to identity. That should never have occurred.
As I understand it, this is not a case where you were, where the lineup was suggestive or anything like that.
No.
Your contention has to do with the manner in, which it was, the witness may have been directed to a particular suspect.
Exactly.
And what is our closest case authority that invalidates a trial on the basis of that kind of?
I cited the Nickerson case, which again is out of the Northern District.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Has this court gone down that line, down that road yet, of looking not just at the suggestiveness, but the conduct of the police who are conducting it as well?
I certainly think it would be appropriate for the court to do that because I have read many cases about tainted lineups, and you're right. Most of those cases have to do with the manner in which those lineups are presented.
Right, and there where you have tangible evidence of, everybody can look for themselves.
Exactly.
Here we have a he says, she says kind of situation.
Right, and in order, I believe, to preserve the sanctity of the criminal justice system, that it, at the least we should have an evidentiary hearing regarding the validity of the recantation. Because at this point we have a witness who's come forward on his own and said this is what happened at the lineup. And frankly, given the serious nature of the consequences that Mr. Ramirez is now 31 years to life sitting in state prison, I think it would behoove the court to look at this and say, of course, this was a violation of due process.
He stole a carton of cigarettes?
Pardon me?
What was the crime that he's in?
Well, he was charged with four offenses, three of which he was convicted for: assault with a deadly weapon against the witness who now has recanted, petty theft with prior, and burglary.
Okay. Thank you. You have used your time.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Brooke Bennington on behalf of Appellee. Your Honor, first let me address the issue that counsel raised regarding whether or not there was a merits-based decision in this case. And before I do that, I should say that this case was filed after the AEDPA was put into place and is subject to the AEDPA deference standard. There was a merit-based decision in this case. Procedurally, what happened after the Superior Court issued its written decision relating to the habeas petition, the case was then filed in both the appellate district and the California Supreme Court. After the written decision was issued by the trial court, by the Superior Court, appellant amended his petition and added what he referred to as a supplemental writ. And in that supplemental writ, he addressed directly the...
Excuse me. Could the clerk please reset the time?
Sorry. Thank you, Your Honor. In the supplemental writ that the appellant filed in the California Supreme Court, he directly addressed the issues raised in the written decision by the Superior Court. In addition to that, he attached to his California Supreme Court petition the transcripts from the reporter's transcripts that the trial court, or the Superior Court rather, said were missing from the initial petition. As such, the petition that was before the California Supreme Court was significantly different than the petition that was before the Superior Court. And the California Supreme Court's silent denial of that petition was a merits-based decision. So the procedural count...
Counsel, how can that be if we're supposed to look back to the last reasoned decision?
Well, Your Honor, the fact that the California Supreme Court decision was different than the trial court decision means you don't look back through, because in...
Reasoned. We have to look at a reasoned decision. If it's a postcard denial, our case law says that's not a reasoned decision, and we don't look to that.
Well, but the facts in before the California Supreme Court, namely the supplemental writ filed by the petitioner in response to the last reasoned decision issued by the Superior Court, augmented the petition before the California Supreme Court. They were ruling on a totally different petition.
Hey, what's your best case authority, then, for the proposition that if there is a supplemental brief filed before the Supreme Court, then that decision becomes a reasoned decision for purposes of habeas?
I don't have a case before me on that, Your Honor.
So you're asking us to make that the law?
Well, I'd be glad to research it and provide authority if there's...
The argument, though? Isn't that the argument you're making?
My argument is that it's a different petition. Just factually, it is a different position, not legally. Factually.
What are we supposed to review, then?
I'm sorry?
What are we to review terms of the ruling on that decision? How are we to review that ruling?
The California Supreme Court denial should be treated as a silent denial, and thus this Court should conduct review under Delgado versus Lewis to see whether that silent denial, this Court should conduct an independent...
Radical theory.
But at any rate, Your Honor, I believe that the record would support that there was a merits-based decision, and if Your Honor does feel that the Superior Court decision is the appropriate one to look through, too.
Does it make any difference, really, as far as you...
Well... If you consider that the trial court, the Superior Court decision, was a merits-based decision, which clearly when you look at it is reasoned, the court goes through its analysis and finds that the validity of the affidavit submitted is in question, and based on that denies the petition. It then goes on to say, in addition, he didn't attach the transcripts in support of his petition. But just because the Superior Court makes that alternate ruling does not mean that it didn't first, on the merits, deny the petition. But under either situation, when this Court reviews it, the appropriate harmless error standard to apply would be Brecht rather than the Chapman.
Why is that?
Because that's the appropriate standard that applies on collateral review.
Well, so when would Chapman apply? Never?
Well, Chapman may apply, for example, if the California Supreme Court issued a written, more than a silent denial, and the California Supreme Court, in their analysis, denying a petition, did an analysis under Chapman, then it would perhaps in that situation be appropriate for this Court to apply the Chapman test to that denial. But when one looks at the facts in this case, in considering a harmless error analysis, and keeping in mind that the district court did erroneously, in my opinion, do harmless error analysis under the Chapman standard, the more stringent Chapman standard, and came to the conclusion that it was harmless error under that standard as well. And the facts in this case, quite simply, are extremely strong when it comes to the identification evidence. Adriana Arvalo, who was the store clerk inside, had known the defendant for 2 or 3 years, had seen him at a prior incident that counsel referenced, saw the appellant before he even got into the store because she had been warned to watch out for him, watched him go to the cigarette counter, take out the cigarettes, walk outside, have a confrontation with a customer. She got within two feet of him. She then saw him go out, have the confrontation with Mr. Torres, get into the car, and drive off. She then identified, gave a description to the police 15 to 20 minutes later, identified him the next day in a photographic lineup. And I think it's significant to note that Mr. Torres also identified the appellant in a photographic lineup the day after the incident, and he is not recanting that identification. He is only recanting the identification procedures that took place at the physical lineup. Nor is he recanting his in-court identification. Ms. Torres, after identifying him in the photo lineup, 7 months later at the physical lineup, which was held at the request of the defense, at which the defense attorney was present, and at which the defense attorney commented on in trial in both opening and closing statement about how it was a fair and properly conducted lineup. Ms. Arvalo identifies him at that lineup, as well as, obviously, Mr. Torres.
Any questions? Don't appear to be any.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. The matter, you have used your time.
Pardon me?
Do you have some, you have used all your time. Do you wish to call and fight to our attention?
Okay. I was just going to point out to the court that while there may not have been a recantation of the photo lineup, the fact is that the transcripts will support the fact that Mr. Torres was never positive about the identification that he made.
Thank you. The case just argued is submitted for decision. The next case, United States versus Alcaraz Chavez. I guess.